98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
Nothing has changed in Phoenix, Arizona, but Devin Booker wakes up to a different world this morning. Gone are the critics, the misinformed, and the analytics geeks who whined about his efficiency, who blamed him for the 50 lost seasons that once defined his career. They're all gone now because Booker saved his first career triple-double for Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. He owned a moment he had never been in before because it was a moment he's played over in his head a million times. Now, until Chris Paul arrived in Phoenix, we were all waiting for signs of discontentment from Booker, because that's what most basketball players do when they're stuck on lost cause franchises. They get tired of the criticism that comes with excessive losing because they know the losing isn't their fault, and they know the stigma that comes with the path that Booker was forced to travel. But Booker is also different. His father trained him to be hardcore, to really understand the level of work and the commitment that greatness requires. And he's mature enough to know that he changed nothing about his journey in retrospect, because Sunday's game doesn't happen without the five-year, 280-loss struggle that predated Paul's arrival, or if Booker's path had been more like Easy Street and less like rock bottom. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Devin Booker is one of the best all-around players in this league. He didn't explode until they got down. He kind of played the point guard position the first half of the game and got everybody else involved. That's how he got the triple-double. Then when the Clippers went on the big run in the third quarter, he says, oh, I got to do this. Chris is not here. I'm the best player in the building. And that's when he went on that 16-18-0 run. Once he got them back in the game, and then he could facilitate again until they needed something. One of the best all-around games I've ever seen. But I love the fact, because like a lot of guys get points, and they just get their numbers. Today, to me, he showed me what a great player he was, because he waited until his team needed him. But the rest of the time, he just got those other guys involved.
Yeah, numbers and impact for Devin Booker yesterday. Charles Barkley on TNT following the Suns' Game 1 win. I think this is the third time, Bick, I'm making this proclamation this postseason alone. That was Devin Booker's best game as a pro. He keeps upping it.
Yeah,
and to do that in the absence of Chris Paul yesterday in Game 1 was obviously needed. Here was Monty Williams, the head coach of the Suns, talking about Booker taking things over and the necessity of it.
Well, I liked the way Devin did it. He didn't inject himself into the game. He just did it out of what we do. You know, there are times where a guy scores and you just want to go grab the ball and jack up a shot. I thought the way Devin did it tonight was within our scheme and what we do. You know, Paul, that's who he is. You know, he's one of the rare guys that can make shots off the dribble like that. He makes tough shots. Like I said in the pregame, I saw him do it in his workouts with the USA team. You know, those guys would play one-on-one all the time and work on stuff like that. So I think the poise of our team was important in that moment. You know, when a guy's making shots like that, it's so easy to become deflated. I thought we got the ball in, went right back down the floor and played in 0.5 and didn't let it mess with us too much.
Yeah. So the gist of the blast, look, the list of Devin Booker critics is shorter than it's ever been.
I would think so.
If there's anybody left on it.
Who would be, right? I mean, this is high stakes, high leverage, big stage basketball. It's the Western Conference Finals. It's Sunday afternoon on a Father's Day. I'm sure the numbers...
On national television, not cable. Over the network television.
Over network, television. So anybody who had any misinformation about Devin Booker's game was set straight yesterday. And a lot of it is ignorance. We know this. We've experienced this with the Arizona Cardinals any number of times. when our local teams get big and get good, doesn't happen very often, but when they do, there's tremendous lag time behind when the rest of the country really figures out what we've got going on, and most of the time up until then, they're just guessing. And so I think a lot of this criticism of Devin Booker was really just laziness. And you could look at analytics and you could compare his point totals to his plus minuses to the team's record and go, what's wrong with this guy? If this guy is so good, why isn't this team winning? That it completely ignored how dysfunctional the teams were around him and how impossible the situation was for Devin Booker. And when you look at how fast things have changed, this is going to be the thing that if we do have this championship parade on July 23rd or whatever it would be, there is going to be a moment of how in the world did this happen overnight? Because it quite literally has been from worst to first. And for that to happen with veteran, competent basketball players alongside Devin Booker tells you just how mature Devin Booker was to not squawk about this while it was happening in real time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's even made comments like, yeah, I've seen some bleep. He's made those comments. So it's not like he was oblivious to it. It's not like he was just happy because he was young and a millionaire. Multimillionaire. He knew what was going on.
Look, there's rumblings in New Orleans. Zion Williamson wants out.
Right. Right.
2 years.
Right.
That's a drop in the bucket to what Devin Booker went through in Phoenix. And New Orleans has been semi-respectable in the 2 years that Zion's been there.
Yeah. So to me, this is a lot of different stories converging at once. You can focus on Chris Paul and his long-awaited journey, how great it would be for that player to get a title, how wrong it would be if he never got one in his career. You can look at Robert Sarver, who is among the worst owners in sports for a long period of time. And now look, he could be the guy that brings a championship to the Phoenix Suns. Yesterday, one of the big topics pregame was, okay, there's all these openings in NBA basketball for head coaching jobs. Do you think black men, qualified black candidates, will start getting more and more opportunities? Look at Robert Sarver's organization. He's got a black general manager and a black head coach. Now, in the grand scheme of things, is this what we should be focusing on? No, but if you're going to judge everything, and that is the way these owners are judged, he's gone from having the worst organization on any number of levels to having a model organization. You could focus on all of these different stories. Devin Booker's the guy that took a lot of arrows, took a lot of blame, and it wasn't fair.
No, it just kept his head down and kept working.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Broussard, NBA analyst from Fox Sports, was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and he had an interesting take on the path that Devin Booker's been on.
Well, Devin, like I said, I don't think he's been disrespected, but I think he's been overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at all these lists people put out of the top five players under 25 years old, he's rarely been on them. And so now he is getting to show America that he is indeed one of the best players, not only 25 and under, but one of the better players in the league, in the world. And what I like about Devin, obviously his game, he can do it at every level. He can finish. He can hit the mid-range, which too many people overlook. Let me just say this to all your young hoopers out there, your dads who have kids playing basketball. Do not neglect the mid-range.
Amen.
Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, what do they all have in common? They're mid-range assassins. All right? Don't neglect the mid-range. And then, of course, Devin can shoot the three fairly well. He's not Steph Curry, but he shoots it pretty well. And he's 6'5 to boot.
The beginning part of that, Devin Booker overlooked, not disrespected. I don't think that's entirely accurate.
No, it's not.
Because when you're overlooking a great player, that inherently is disrespect because of the surrounding. And look at the situation the Suns were in. Devin Booker was part of this run of lottery picks that the Suns didn't hit on a bunch of. They hit on Devin Booker. They got some use out of TJ Warren. You know, later on, Mikal Bridges, obviously, DeAndre Ayton, but they had a lot of picks that didn't work out. They made a lot of moves that didn't work out, and Devin Booker, again, just kind of shut up about it and went back to work with this maniacal quest to get better. How many times do you see a player come into the league and improve six straight seasons? You don't see it very often.
No.
You're seeing it with him. So, I think overlooking somebody in Devin Booker's situation is tantamount to disrespect.
Michael Jordan was so maniacally competitive that he would devote every offseason of his career, and this is when he was already by far the best player in the league and the wealthiest player in the league and the most engaging two-way player in the NBA. At the time of Michael Jordan's ascension, great offensive players didn't necessarily always try hard on defense. And he would never take a possession off. And what I'm trying to get at is his competitiveness was such that he forced himself to work on one thing every offseason. It was the first thing about Devin Booker that I noticed and that looked familiar to a great player in me was this ability to go, okay, the offseason's here, but my job is more important than going to the Bahamas or going to Cancun. My quest to be great is what I care about. That's my vacation. And if I go on vacation, I'm not going to be happy because I'm not serving my talent the way I want to serve my talent. And that's Devin Booker. You don't do that if you're not driven by a real vision for greatness. You just don't.
Isn't it funny that the videos that came out in the offseason that he gets criticized for, it's not him on a banana boat.
No.
It's him being double teamed in a gym,
right,
doing pickup games.
He's working on his game.
Yeah.
And it's also funny, you mentioned, Vinny, that this is like the third time you said it was his best game of his career. Think of just the landmarks here. The bubble, the closest thing he had to the postseason, and he's essentially the MVP of the bubble. Then his first ever playoff game, he scores more than 30 points. Then his first closeout, you know, big closeout game, he has 40-something points.
47.
47 points. Then his first ever Western Conference Finals game, he carries the team without Chris Paul. It's unbelievable how he steps up to every big moment.
It's true, and it's also funny because it's been this whole different wave of emotions, too, during this postseason, whom the Suns' most valuable player is. Whether it's Devin Booker or Chris Paul. Or even earlier on in the postseason, there was an argument for DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, I still think it's Chris Paul, but I do think by the end of it might be Devin Booker. It might be Chris Paul's MVP season that should have been in Devin Booker's NBA Finals MVP, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but holding Devin Booker up on one hand and then looking at, you know, an extreme example on the other side is the Philadelphia 76ers are out. Ben Simmons is getting the bulk of the blame, and if not Ben Simmons, a lot of it's going to Doc Rivers, who had just this ridiculous number of losses in potential closeout games, by far the most of any NBA coach in history. But Ben Simmons, we talked about him last week, about his lack of free throw shooting, his lack of want to when it comes to shooting the basketball. I can't speak with authority on what Ben Simmons does in the offseason, but he's far enough into his career where he should be a viable shooter with his athletic ability. So what is he doing in the offseason? Not working. Now, what's developed since we had that conversation last week? I think Ben Simmons is so far into his own head. He is an NBA player who was a number one overall pick who has zero resembling self-confidence right now.
He hasn't improved at all.
No, the shot that he passed up yesterday where he could have had a two-handed dunk and he gave it up to Matisse Thybulle. The Sixers are up like with 3.5 minutes to go, up by a point, and he gives up the ball. Thybulle ends up hitting only one free throw. The Hawks come down and hit a three, completely changed the complexion.
No doubt.
Joel Embiid mentioned it. Doc Rivers was asked, can Ben Simmons be a point guard on a championship team? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And contrast that now with how much Devin Booker has improved as a defender.
Yes.
As a passer.
Yes. Devin Booker could always score, but he's worked on those other elements of the game. Exactly the point I was trying to make, Jarrett. Perfectly said.
Well, and again, that is part of the issue now with a lot of basketball players who come in and don't understand work. And I would think that that's one of the biggest bridges that DA has crossed. The idea of thinking I'm working hard versus really working hard. He's crossed that bridge. Ben Simmons and all that he can be, the fact that he has never dedicated real time to solve his free throw shooting. It's despicable.
Where's jump shooting?
Yeah, I mean, it just tells you that a lot of people are not driven by greatness. They're driven by, oh, this is great. I'm famous. Oh, this is great. I am going to be super wealthy. Not a lot of people in the NBA are just driven by this abstract definition of what you need to become.
Yeah, and he's blessed with freakish talent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And also, he was a number one pick, not like Devin Booker, who was a late lottery pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just shows you that's why I guess people are comparing him to Kobe, especially now more than ever. It's because of that maniacal desire to continue to get better and to win at every cost.
Yeah, and for old school fans of basketball, going back to something Chris Broussard said about what Devin Booker did yesterday, what Chris Paul has done all season long and throughout his entire career, is just to rely on that mid-range shot. Now we've seen two different members of the Suns in this postseason, Vic, treat a 12 to 15 foot jump shot as if it's a layup, if they get their spot. Devin Booker talked about how much he leans on the mid-range shot in his game yesterday.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much been my game my whole life. And I never shied away from it. And, you know, I never have not took them shots. And I feel that's what a lot of defenses give up, you know, living by the so-called analytics. But, you know, I think it's for certain players. And if you put your work in and, you know, you shoot those shots at a high clip, that, you know, it's tough for a defense to guard that because, you know, that's what they've been giving up all season.
Not only that, Big, you talk about how the defense responds to that or doesn't respond to that. When you got a guy coming down and just continually getting to his spot, it is demoralizing for a defense because there's not much they can do about it.
No. No, you're right about that. And it's there were elements in his performance yesterday that looked like a bigger Chris Paul.
Yeah.
To the elbow.
When he went on that span of 16 straight points, it was almost, I was thinking this, not only is he there's this steadying force in the game in a tight ball game, it's almost like he's paying tribute to a teammate that's not there.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's for you, Chris. Oh, yeah. This one's for you, too. And so is this one and that one.
And well, but it also speaks to, as you just said, to a guy who has not only gone, oh, cool, I've got a great player here next to me who can get me the basketball. It's a guy who's learned from him and gone, you know what? I'm going to do that. Look at the way he can get to that elbow and get that shot off whenever he wants. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that.
We talk so much about CP3's impact on Ayton. But he's had a big impact on Devin Booker and the way he plays, too.
There's a play in the game that we want to talk about, we haven't talked about yet. It was Devin Booker's last bucket of the game. The Clippers, to their credit, they got down by 10. They storm back. They score 8 straight points. It's a 2-point game after Terrence Mann hits a 3-pointer with 22 seconds left. It's a timeout. And Jay Crowder made reference to this, too. The last 3 minutes of the game, where the hell is Chris at? They didn't have Chris Paul to rely on. Monty Williams called a timeout and drew up a play that ended like this.
22 seconds left in regulation. Suns with a 2-point lead. Crowder with the ball. They get it to Booker. He scores.
Great, great play by the Suns. Clippers inverted everything. The Suns just took advantage of it.
Yeah, I think the Clippers were getting ready for an inbounds pass to come in and commit a foul to put the Suns on the line with under 24 seconds to go. And the way that was drawn up was just perfect, with Booker getting an uncontested slam dunk. But another sign, no panic. Chris Paul's not here. You might be wondering where he's at, but there was no panic without him on the floor.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with the word no. I think there was some starting to creep in. I think they handled it, but I think the game got into a level that Jay Crowder could sense a little bit of. I'm looking for the right word. I don't want to use the wrong word here.
Gripping.
White
knuckling.
Yeah, that's the word. Gripping. I like that because I don't think Jay Crowder makes that comment if he didn't think that was something they really need to get better on next time. Because keep in mind, the play that you mentioned, one of the common themes here from Game 4 of the Lakers series through the Nuggets series is how lopsided these games have been.
Uh-huh.
The Suns got themselves caught up in a back and forth. And they handled it certainly well enough. And that play that they drew up to Booker, it's... The play happened, and I thought, how did he get so wide open? How did they pop him for a dunk like that?
Mm-hmm. Last thing you expected.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be that easy.
No. And so props to the coaching staff for having that play in their back pocket. Obviously, they sketched that thing up and said, oh, yeah, this is going to work against these defensive sets we get from the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Put that bad boy in the back pocket. That's a number one in a tight situation. It was great.
Yeah, and then Devin Booker got the opportunity to ice it at the free throw line, and it ends up to be a 6-point win. But going back to the Jay Crowder quote, and that was, okay, last 3 minutes of the game, whatever he was intimating or suggesting might have been the feeling, the Suns, you're right, they have had a lot of games that have been decided by double digits. There hasn't been a lot of real tight late-game situations. But if you go back to Game 2 of the Lakers series, the Suns found themselves in one of those situations where at that time of the postseason, Bick, they were essentially playing without Chris Paul. He was there, but he mm-hmm. wasn't Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the game where he really struggled and didn't even play a ton of minutes because he was really, really bothered by that shoulder injury. They came up short on that one.
Yeah.
The Lakers dominated that 3-minute stretch.
That
so if you want to go from that example to later in the postseason now, when it's close within 3 minutes, and for whatever reason you couldn't rely on Chris Paul again, lessons were learned,
yeah.
Apparently, judging from the results.
Yeah, and now becomes the big question, if Chris Paul can play in Game 2, I don't know how the Clippers are going to handle that, especially with the energy in that building, but if they can find a way to go 2 up on this team, the Clippers might crack a little bit here, because that's the best thing the Suns have going for them right now is this gale force momentum, in my opinion. They're just growing closer and closer together mm-hmm. with every game.
Yeah. But the Clippers were down 0-2 in both of their other series they won.
But the Clippers have already acknowledged, Paul George already acknowledged, this is a different class of basketball team we're playing.
Yep.
Which is quite a compliment to the Suns, given the fact that the Jazz were the number one seed.
Exactly.
And the Clippers don't have Kawhi Leonard, which is a big...
Well, of course it is.
Well, they didn't have him at the end of the Jazz series, and they won those two games.
That's true.
Too. Monty Williams also commented on winning 8 playoff games in a row.
We hadn't really paid attention, but when you say you're grateful for it. Obviously, anytime you can get a win in the regular season, you feel like you've come up with a cure for something. So to win games in the playoffs, especially from where we came from, it's huge for us. But we don't talk about it because we're not satisfied. You know, we always have a get to, not a got to mentality. We get to play in this game, and when we win, we also talk about gratitude, and we think about the things that go into winning. And then we try to get better.
Yeah, those teams that I mentioned earlier that have gone on 8-game winning streaks that went on to win a title, the 2017 Warriors
mm-hmm.
won 15 straight playoff games. You need 16 to win a title. They won 15 straight. That's mm-hmm. that's just crazy. And to do it in one postseason, the 99 Spurs won 12 in a row. The 2016 Cavs won 10 in a row. The New Jersey Nets in 2003 won 10 in a row. They did not win the title. The San Antonio Spurs 2012 won 10 in a row. They won a title. The 96 Bulls and 92 Bulls, along with the 82 Lakers, each won 9 in a row and won the title.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2010 Lakers that ousted the Suns won 8 in a row and they won a title.
Yeah.
Huh. But that's it's a pretty short list considering the length of time that the NBA playoffs have been around for teams to reel off 8 straight wins.
Well, and I think one thing that Kellen said earlier that I think is going to be very apropos is the Clippers are going to have to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, they're going to have to come with some different kind of adjustment in Game 2, and trying to predict that will be clearly something the Suns coaching staff will be looking at.
Yes, and the Suns coaching staff has adjusted very well to adjustments made against them so far in the postseason.
Yeah.
We'll continue to talk NBA playoffs and the Phoenix Suns run in the Western Conference Finals. Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider. He'll join us next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns Clippers now.
Oh, they can get to the finals. Oh, I'm convinced they can. I think they can win it all. I mean, I really do. They're one of... There's three in the East, and I'd say probably four in the West, so... seven teams, I think, that can win it all this year, and Phoenix is right there. And it's amazing because when I think we've talked about it before the season, where did I see this team? I said, yeah, man, I hope we just get in, you know, being at 6-8 range, and maybe you can maybe steal around. But I honestly believe that they can win it all here. I really do. And that's saying a lot compared to, this Western Conference is as loaded as we've seen in a long time.
Those are the words of Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, from May 17th on this very radio show. 35 days later, not only do those words sound still great to Suns fans, but the Suns are making Bobby Marks look really, really good
prophetic.
Right now.
Yeah.
And Bobby joins us right now here on Bickley and Murata. Bobby, how are you?
Man, I should go play lottery tickets, huh? I actually had Atlanta beating Philly in the last round also, so my streak of picking teams is pretty good so far.
Man, and you know, piggybacking off what you said back in May in that cut, the landscape of the West changed dramatically over the course of this playoffs, but just focusing on what we've seen from the Suns and the Clippers, and I thought game one was extraordinary basketball, but the thing that I can't get past, Bobby, and I think you're going to agree with me here, is the way the Suns are connected and put together at just from a team concept is hard for a lot of teams to deal with.
Well, and especially with Chris out, and I thought from the game, I guess it was game four in the Lakers series, they just grew up tremendously. Mm-hmm. They just took really a big step there, and Devin has kind of gone from just a good, all-star to a franchise-level player. Certainly yesterday confirmed it, and they're just showing you different ways that they can score the ball. Certainly defensively, they've been one of the better teams here, but it feels like they're kind of just getting better. From the Denver series to game one, we'll see where this goes. We'll see. I'm not expecting Kawhi back for this series. I think this is kind of who you're going to see from the Clippers perspective. We'll see if maybe they can get Chris Paul back by the weekend here. I think you have to be happy because they are not just, hey, we've gotten to a conference finals, everything is gravy after this. I think there's a mindset that they're in it to win it all right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's also sort of a revelation here in Phoenix, particularly over the weekend's games, and after watching Brooklyn lose, that, wow, Phoenix might be the best team left in this tournament. And it's apparent to everyone, but for everyone who's lived this narrative arc for the past 10 years, it's just hard to wrap your brain around it, Bobby.
Well, yeah, it's a matter of just kind of whoever is the fittest left standing. That's really what the playoffs have taught us. I think Brooklyn, with Kyrie and then Harden at less than 100%, they could have, like I said, a Durant foot from getting to a conference finals. And it'll be interesting out east with Milwaukee and Atlanta, that's an intriguing series here, but I think I do think if you probably stack up the four teams, that Phoenix would probably be the number one seed out of this group of four right now.
Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Obviously, when you get to the playoffs, adjustments are constantly happening. And I think mid-game, Ty Lue was adjusting things in terms of dealing with DeAndre Ayton. If you had to forecast like the next big adjustment by the Clippers, what do you think's coming, Bobby?
Well, I don't think they're going to go big. I think you're probably going to still see Batum primarily at the five here. I think I don't see them starting Zubac and kind of going in that direction. They already did it in the Utah series with, I think, Gobert one game, and it didn't work out here. I think, this is kind of who they are right now. I don't know how many more adjustments you can have. We've seen the best of Terrence Mann. We've seen Luke Kennard come off the bench. Marcus Morris, certainly the role players there. There's not much left there. So it's like, hey, this is our best lineup that we're going to put out. And I think what the Clippers learned in game one is that DeAndre Ayton is a lot different than Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
offense. I think he's a little more versatile. I think he can get out and defend. Certainly, if they're going to spread the floor and they're going to put, just a small ball lineup out there. And I don't know if that's going to work like it did in games five and six.
Do you think there could be a bigger role for Boogie Cousins in this series?
I think so. There was a stretch there. I think it was the second quarter where he had, I think, maybe 8 points, 4 rebounds. He had a couple baskets in a row. So I think that's, if anything, that maybe that's what you do, but then that takes somebody off the court for you. I don't know. I don't know if it's a sustainable. I don't know if Cousins can give you 30 minutes here. I don't know if he's there, but I think, you know, could his minutes increase? Possibly. A little bit different of an inside presence for them.
All right, I'm curious what you think when you watch the Suns play and just the level of selfless basketball, the willingness to pass and move the ball movement, the camaraderie on this team is off the charts. Is that obvious to you when you watch? And what does that mean to a basketball team when you can really find that elite level of connectivity?
I just think it means that hero ball in the playoffs doesn't work. And I think they've realized that you can go around and watch a lot of these teams that are sitting at home right now. I think Philadelphia, certainly, down the stretch of those, games 5 and 7 here, I thought they became, selfish. I think Brooklyn was basically kind of, backed in the corner with Durant basically on an island by himself here. And I think for any of these teams to get out of these rounds to an NBA Finals here, it's going to have to be not just one or two guys. It's going to have to be, probably 7 or 8 players here. And you saw it in game one. We'll see what happens in, as you guys know, every game is kind of a different animal here. Mm-hmm. We'll see in game two.
Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA Front Office Insider, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Moving away from the Suns for a second and looking at the situation in Philadelphia, it was hard to watch Ben Simmons at times in this series with the lack of confidence he has. The comments coming from Philly in the media availability after the game didn't paint a picture of confidence. Are you expecting massive changes with Philadelphia this offseason, Bobby?
And I just did a podcast with Zach Lowe, and we talked about it, and I said, if you're a team out there and wanting Ben Simmons, are you going to, inherit that contract? That contract's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, $147 million left. If he was a free agent right now, would the team sign him for that amount? I don't think there would be anybody. So although people can scream they want Ben Simmons out and we want change in here, change is not always that easy. And I don't think you want to sell him on 20 cents on dollar either. So something's got to figure itself out here because, it was troubling. I mean, the dunk at the end, right? I mean, passed it to Tybal, man, there's something going on there that none of us could figure it out. And it's something, and it felt like somebody kind of kidnapped his body and put somebody else in there. And, certainly defensively still at an elite level here, but you're not going to win many playoff games when you're basically playing 4 and 5 basketball. And I think they'll probably be a more aggressive with Simmons from a trade standpoint than maybe they were last year or even in the offseason. But, when you're making $33 million and, it's not a franchise. I don't think he's a franchise-level player.
Yeah.
The return value is not always there.
Last one for you, Bobby. We appreciate the time. James Jones won Executive of the Year. Well-deserved. The Suns do get a postseason award. I was a little surprised the voting was as close as it was. Were you surprised by that?
I was. I mean, he just barely, I think, edged Dennis Lindsay from Utah. And Dennis, I'm a big fan of Dennis here, but their offseason really consisted of Gobert and Mitchell extensions. I mean, that's kind of what it is. I don't know what the criteria is for executive here. I really don't. I mean, it's voted by all the GMs here, so maybe they don't know it either. But considering when you do the Chris Paul trade, isn't that enough? God Almighty!
Yeah.
So I don't know. He won it though, and he deserves it. And I threw out a tweet yesterday to Ryan McDonough, who had been there. And I know there was a lot that happened there, certainly the coaching carousel. But I do think you got to give a little bit of a credit, Booker and certainly Ayton, at one. And then the Bridges trade was really good too. So kudos to James and that group there for. It's amazing. It's an amazing story, as you guys know. I mean, compared to where it was 2 years ago to 3 games away from an NBA Finals.
Bobby, great stuff as always. We always enjoy having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you. Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA Front Office Insider. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com. In case you didn't think the Phoenix Suns were a different animal when it comes to quality of team, that was verified by a member of the L.A. Clippers yesterday. We'll get into that and the flip side of it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns Clippers now.
We just got to find a way to adjust. This is a different caliber team than the other two teams we faced. A little bit more guard play. We got to figure out how to counter, which we will. We'll figure out another game plan. As much as we wanted this one, I think this was just a good fill-out game to see. Adjustments. We've been great at adjusting, and we've been great at playing better as the series goes on.
Well, they have been that's Paul George yesterday, takeaways from the game, but the meat of that, the heart of it, the real good nugget in there is this is a different caliber team than what we've played in the first two rounds. So no, the Phoenix Suns, they're not the Dallas Mavericks, they're not the Utah Jazz, who even had the number one seed and collapsed big time down the stretch on Friday. This Suns team is wired a little bit differently. But I think the flip side of that too, Bic, is when you look at it in terms of opposition for the Suns, the LA Clippers are a different caliber of opponent too.
Yeah.
This is not the Lakers, who packed it in a couple times during that series. Certainly not Denver, who got called soft and accused by their head coach of quitting in a four-game sweep. This Clippers team, you're going to have to make sure they're dead if you want to get by them, because they have come back from two-game deficits.
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this NBA postseason has already set a record. You had three teams do it. The Bucks did it to the Nets as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there is that. There's a certain resilience to this Clippers team, and you could see again yesterday just how massively talented Paul George is. This is not going to be easy. I don't think that for a second. But I do believe what the Phoenix Suns have going for them right now is really, really powerful. To the point where, like Kellen said during his visit with us, there were some, on second viewing, some of the possessions looked a little bit desperate from a Clippers team that's got a lot of fake bigs and a team that likes to play small.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're calling him. And that's Zubats, who is not very good. He's a big body.
He's an active guy, but I don't think he's not a guy you can lean on for 30 minutes a game, especially against the center, the quality of DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, and Boogie Cousins, all those guys. Yeah. So the other thing that's interesting that we have not gotten into yet today would be this tweet from Rachel Nichols about how Chris Paul might have, how he might have efforted to communicate with his players during the game.
This has been out there for a while, but it was just brought to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Nichols tweeted like 20 hours ago that, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the tweet in front of me. Oh, here it is. Jay Crowder told me he suspects Chris Paul was texting his brother CJ during the game because CJ was yelling out strategy points from the sideline. Crowder said, quote, "I know that was CP." She added, "The Clippers got their own brother assist from Markieff Morris, who was courtside helping twin Marcus."
Wow. there was that earlier in the game. During the game yesterday, somebody tweeted out Markieff was screaming at Marcus to get up and pressure Devin Booker more on the ball, get up in his face more. But I had no idea that Chris Paul had gone to these lengths. That's so funny.
Oh, everyone made the joke that he was going to just put a mustache on and pretend he's Cliff Paul. And he was just like a half a step away from actually doing that.
Yeah, that's right. The other thing about Jay Crowder in that game, Jay Crowder deserves a lot of credit for keeping everybody straight defensively. DeAndre Ayton spoke extensively about that after the game, that at times he would actually literally grab DeAndre Ayton and pull him to the space he was supposed to be in. And DeAndre said, "That's the kind of team we have."
Yep.
Man, Jay Crowder did a lot tonight. He was the anchor tonight on just being so verbal. You know, just he was loud. He was communicating the right coverages for us. You know, there's a couple of times where I got caught up and I didn't know where I was at. And, you know, sometimes he had to physically grab me to, you know, make sure I was in the right spot, you know, and that's the type of team we got. And today he just was everywhere, man. He made sure, everybody stayed up put. He made sure I stayed out of foul trouble. I think I gave up a three on the strong side trying to help him out, but he got on me saying he didn't need the help. And, you know, that's the type of team we have, you know, just giving each other the right criticism and playing hard as heck.
I think I could channel everybody's inner Suns fan when I say, Jay Crowder. Love that guy.
Love that guy.
What is up, Jay Crowder? Jay Crowder once again hit three threes. Suns win.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's – well, there you go. There's the magic formula. All of it, though, it's just – like I said, there all the conversations we had about this basketball team and whether or not could you trust a team approach in terms of shooting the basketball in big moments? We've got that answer. And I thought one of the most profound things Jay Crowder said after the game is, look, I've been on both kinds of good teams in the past, the top-heavy teams with a couple of stars and the full teams, and I like full teams a lot better. Said that's the route that he prefers to take. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what you have in Phoenix. Yeah.
Do you want to hear
let's do it.
Thoughts from Jay on that?
Yeah.
I'd rather be a full team than be top-heavy. You know, I've been on both sides of that. I've saw it. I played with it. I've been a part of it. But it's much easier for everything to start clicking, especially this time of the year when you got a full roster. You know, whenever you tap that hand, it's sub out the game. You know, the guy's coming in, he's gonna give it his all. You know, it's no big letdowns from when you sub out the game for our team, 1 through 5, 5 through 15. So it's just like it's great to be a part of something special and everybody pushing for the same goal instead of being like a super team and just being top heavy or whatever it is and trying to see where the chips fall. But it's great to be a part of a full, like, we got a real team. We've been saying it all year. A lot of guys, we will get the names as we continue to win games here in the playoffs, but a lot of guys want the same thing, and that's to win games, and that's all it is. You just see a lot of guys wanting to win and giving their all
during
the games.
And I think one of the reasons why we're talking about James Jones as the executive of the year for his job as GM is putting together a really formidable 15 to 16-man roster. I mean, look what happened with the Utah Jazz in that series. Donovan Mitchell was not 100%, although he gave a Herculean effort at times playing with that bad ankle, tweaked it again late in the game. Mike Conley gave it a go in Game 6 on Friday night, but that was the first action he had, and I think that was more of an emotional lift for anything else because he wasn't very good out there. But the Jazz really didn't have any guys to step up to fill those roles. It was just, okay, we lost this guy, the rotation gets smaller.
Mm-hmm.
The Suns are not dealing with that.
No.
The Suns very easily could have gone yesterday, okay, Chris Paul's not playing, we'll go Devin Booker and Cam Johnson, you're in the starting lineup, and Mikal Bridges is playing the two.
Mm-hmm.
But they relied on the depth. And Cameron Payne had an influence on that game. There's no doubt about it.
He did. I think it took him a while to get there, but I think I also really respect that he was caught up in a game that he wasn't vibing with in the first half. He couldn't quite find the right mix of calm, distribute versus attack, because Campaign plays the game of basketball much differently than Chris Paul does.
Oh, yeah.
I thought in the second half he was terrific, and that just speaks to this kid's resilience. You've heard it. You've heard him talk about it. He gets very passionate when talking about fighting for his life in the NBA every game.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed it yesterday. I think Etuan Moore was a little overmatched in the moment, but I'll bet you he's good if they give him another shot.
I agree, too, because that's a really hard transition to make. The first, you know, Etuan Moore got early minutes against the Lakers when Chris Paul came out in game one, but the only substantial playing time he's had recently, and this was in the regular season, when he got to that big run against San Antonio in the regular season finale, he hit the big three-pointer to win that game. But it's hard to step in, even though you're there and you're soaking it all in, unless you're on the court contributing, it's hard to match that intensity. I have faith in Etuan Moore, too, if he gets another chance.
No, I agree with that.
Win a pair of tickets to Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. Just text TICKET to 620-620 and listen for your name every hour starting at 7 a.m. tomorrow for your chance to win Phoenix Suns playoff tickets. Once again, that's TICKET to 620-620. Devin Booker, if you were a car, what kind of car would you be? That's one of the questions Jarrett Carlin has crafted in his return to social studies.
How did we ever get by without you?
Which is next here on Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.